Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. I'm Lisa Sharon Harper, president of Freedom Road, a consulting group dedicated to shrinking the narrative gap. Welcome to the Freedom Road podcast. Each episode, we speak with national faith leaders, advocates, artists, and activists to have the kinds of conversations that we normally have on the front lines. It's just that this time we've got microphones in our faces and you are listening in. And in this critical election year, where the most dedicated base for the GOP candidate is a rising tide of white Christian nationalism within the evangelical community, we have got to take time to understand it. So I have invited the producer director of God and Country, a new documentary that has literally just hitting theaters all over the country. Dan Partlin is joining us and he is the producer director. Based on the book, The Power Worshippers by Catherine Stewart, God and Country focuses in on the inner workings of the white Christian nationalism movement, the decision makers, and the funders. Can somebody say hello? This is what we need to understand. So we would love to hear your thoughts. And I want you to tweet to me at Lisa S. Harper or to Freedom Road at Freedom Road Us and keep sharing the podcast with your friends and networks and letting us know what you think. So Dan, you ready to dive in?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much. So one of the things that we always do here on Freedom Road is we start with our own stories, and in particular, our stories of faith. So I'm wondering, I mean, what is your faith story? How might it connect or intersect with the story that you tell in God and Country?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking. Yeah, I definitely came at this content or began with this content really with a concern about the direction of American democracy. Mm. What I learned sort of along the way is that this movement also represents a significant danger to the American church itself. Mm. That was kind of that's sort of the surprise that I had about about my own participation and how it would reflect upon me. I think, you know, my faith background is interesting. I'm a secular person. I come from a family of multiple generations of interfaith marriage.
Wow.
And that means that, you know, that means that I have cousins who have grandparents who don't share the same religion of them that they do. Mm-hmm. Right? That means that of my five, you know, the five families that comprise my first cousins, literally none of us have the same faith tradition.
Wow.
And yet we all went to each other's services. And when you go to the services of your cousin, you practice the tradition that they practiced. Among those families, there includes Catholics, mm-hmm. Presbyterians, atheists, Jews, and Greek Orthodox.
Wow.
And that's an American family. And, you know, for my whole life, those faith traditions and family that lived very comfortably together. Mm-hmm. And no one thought about it. You know, it wasn't like anyone felt like they were virtue signaling by participating in each other's thing. It was just what we did as a family. And so that's the America that I come from, and the America that really was doing pluralism very well. And I think the crisis that we're facing at the moment is, despite great traditions of particularly religious pluralism in America, at the moment, we're not doing it that well.
Wow. So what was it that actually led you to produce God and Country? How did you come across this story? What made you invest years, really, in the production and directing of this work?
Well, so, you know, during in the period after the 2020 election, mm-hmm. I, of course, had been very concerned about the state of American democracy, because I think it had been, you know, American democracy has been so stable. It was just like the firmness of the earth. Nobody ever questioned that America might have a problem with its, mm-hmm. you know, its civic and political culture. But that problem turns out was brewing, and it had been brewing for a while. And you don't see these things until they reach a crisis point, until they mm-hmm. bubble up. And it was very clear that in the period starting around 2015 or so and into present, that we did have a problem. Mm. And so I was very much just trying to, you know, research and consume all kinds of different angles on that when someone passed me Catherine Stewart's book, The Power Worshippers. And that really caused me to check in with this movement that I was aware of. As a politically engaged person, I was aware of the rise of the kind of 80s era movement, the of the Christian right, the moral majority, and things like that. But the nature of today's political, of today's media silos, I think, is that unless you're in that, unless they're in your feed because you have those interests and you have those friends, you're not seeing the way other people are living. You're not seeing things through the lens that other of your countrymen are seeing them. And so the power worshipers really got me to have to push outside of my own bubble and really try to dig and find it. And when I did, I was just astonished at what I found. I mean, the size and scale, the scope of what has developed in this movement that purports to have anything whatsoever to do with Christianity, but is in fact just a political movement masquerading as a faith, the size of it and the pervasiveness of this message that this is a faith-based identity is astonishing. And that's what I discovered and then looked to reflect in the film.
So what exactly have you come to understand about white Christian nationalism that you didn't understand when you began? And I know that there's a lot. There's actually a lot. Your film is incredibly informative, but is there like a number one thing that everybody has got to understand that you didn't and you had your aha moment?
Ooh, where to begin? There are so many. I think the first most important thing is actually just how difficult it is to understand what white Christian nationalism is. That is really, really hard. I mean, people use it in passing all the time, but it's really, really hard to drill down and get your arms around it, because I think there's a danger, and you know, some folks on the left, I think, sometimes slip into this of starting to just cast anything that's Christian and politically conservative as Christian. I think that's very, very problematic, because really the people who we need to reach are themselves Christian conservatives. And it's important that they understand that there is nothing wrong with being a Christian conservative. It isn't, it has become, sadly, just in a statistical sense, Christian conservatism is virtually identical to white Christian nationalism.
Yeah.
Statistical sense. But of course, as different ideologies and faith traditions, there's no reason that that has to be.
What do you mean by that when you say it's a statistical sense? Like what are you think? What's in your mind when you say that?
Well, this political identity that has been defined by a lot of good scholars has a list of political deliverables. That's really what defines white Christian nationalism, is a list of political deliverables, not so much any faith tradition.
Right.
And, you know, there are people who are, you know, deeply devout and deeply conservative who break from that particular list of deliverables and have their own things, and they are still conservative and they are still Christian. But the overwhelming identity of conservative Christians, it involves this list of political deliverables that is really generated by the Christian nationalist movement.
So in a Venn diagram, right? Yeah. They are two separate groups.
They are.
But there is significant overlap.
Yeah.
As in, the majority of people who would call themselves Christian conservatives would fall within this political vision of white Christian nationalists. They align in that vision. Not all of them, but the majority.
Exactly. I think that's safe to say.
Yeah. And I mean, I think so. Oh my gosh, there's so many places that I want to go. So for you, what was it like for you to have that aha moment? Like when you realized this, what did you think about the film that you were making?
Well, I think it was very important to me right from the start that the film had to draw a bright line between what was Christian and what was faith and what was politics. And this is really complicated because, of course, people's faith is going to inform their politics, right? That's an MLK thing, right? Like you want to bring the moral teachings of a faith to work in your political beliefs, of course. Mm-hmm. But the difference is whether it's informing them or whether the faith, the alliance with faith is kind of the justification for any belief. So MLK never came to the public and said, the reason that we need to desegregate is because my faith says so.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You took the virtues of the faith, the teachings of the faith, which is that because of human dignity, because of justice, that's mm-hmm. what you argue it on, right? Mm-hmm. Because we are a pluralistic society. Mm-hmm. And so we have to allow people to have whatever faith they want. But if they're going to make an argument to the general civic culture, they need to actually persuade people with something more than because my faith says so, or they mm-hmm. run afoul of our First Amendment in the United States, which says that there's no establishment of a religion in law. Mm-hmm. But that's only the one problem. The other problem is whether those beliefs really do have anything to do with the faith at all. Mm-hmm. It's very, very hard for me to see how a political identity that has come out in favor of preemptive war is for the death penalty, is against taking in political refugees, is against gun control and control of gun violence, is against environmental protections. It's very, very difficult for me to see how this has anything to do with Christian faith.
These are our stories. You're listening to the Freedom Road podcast, where we bring you stories from the front lines of the struggle for justice. So, Dan, early in the film, one of the interviewees says, if America has an irreplaceable role in God's story and democracy gets in the way, then democracy has got to go. And this was chilling for me as I was listening to this interviewee say this. And yet it's not new. Martin Luther King Jr. literally said the same thing in 1967 in his book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community. What he said is that the segregationist would rather have an American form of fascism than democracy if democracy requires equality, right? So then in the first 20 minutes of your film, we get to like minute 20, and I'm like checking my pulse because it's racing and I'm terrified. I mean, like truly, like what you really did in this film, you laid out in the first 20 minutes, what is going on. And then Anthea Butler clarifies the issue for anyone who was still on the fence. She says, we can lose our democracy and we are closer than we have ever been to losing it. So I want to know, when you were behind the camera listening to her say this, how did you feel when you heard her say that?
You know, that's one of those moments. You know, it's important for people to understand what a documentary is.
Yeah.
People think sometimes that the documentary filmmaker has this thing that they have decided they want to say, and then they go out and they kind of get people to say the things in interviews and then they put them together. But it's a more genuine journey of discovery, mm-hmm. at least for me, which is, of course, I'd read Anthea's book. I'd read the books of all of the participants, and that's a lot of books, and as well as other books. From
it is a lot of books. Yeah.
And columns and all that. But you know, so then you're interviewing them, you want to give them an opportunity to lay out some, you know, their own scholarship, their own perspectives, you know, in a clear and concise way. But then what you're really looking forward to as an interviewer is to go to the next level, is the questions that you had that the book didn't answer, mm-hmm. and have some frank talk about that. So when you ask questions like that, you know, you want some, I'm always, I'm just a citizen. I want to be reassured that this doesn't mean that we're about to slip, you know, that America is about to go over the precipice and slip into a theocracy, because I very much respect the opinions and insights of all the participants. When they have a genuine feeling that that is not the case based on their scholarship, based on their expertise, it's a shocking moment. And so, look, as a as an interviewer, for the sake of myself and for the sake of the audience, I'm always somewhat in the role of the audience.
Yeah.
When Anthea says, you know, the danger is the United States could slip over the precipice and become a theocracy, I say, is that plausible? Is that really, does that seem true? And, you know, sometimes somebody who is not, you know, doesn't have the, isn't that confident in their assertion, will draw it back.
Yeah, well, I'm not, well, you know, I didn't really mean that.
Let me clarify what I mean. And that's what you want. You want somebody to clarify what they mean.
Yeah.
In that interview, you know, given the opportunity to clarify, Anthea made clear that she really does see us as in that great apparel.
Wow. Wow. Thank you so much. So when Anthea said that, you were not expecting that. And did it give you a sense of the urgency of this moment and even the need for this film?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I don't, you know, I think you put together a lot of different voices so that you can color the perspective. The film isn't any one person's perspective. It isn't even, you know, exactly my perspective, right? People have a hard time understanding that sometimes you'd include comments that you don't agree with. You're including the comments that you think are important for the audience to hear in order for them to form their own opinions. So, you know, I think that the concern about America, you know, slipping into a theocracy, you know, I think that there were a lot of steps away from that. What I think we are not a lot of steps away from is having more racial, political, social strife, tension, political violence based on the surrounding this issue, based on the momentum that this white Christian nationalist movement has gathered and their sense of entitlement to being the class of people in the United States that gets to call the shots. They showed us on January 6th that they feel strongly enough about that, that they're willing to attack the seat of American democracy in order to force their will, even in light of not having won the vote. So it's deep, that's the core of it. It is deeply anti-democratic. And whenever you have two classes of people, meaning if there is if white Christians are the true stakeholders in the United States and everybody else is kind of tolerated, whenever you have two classes of people, you can't have democracy. That's not democratic. One vote, one person, one vote is how we do it in the United States. And they've got to be reminded of that.
So Reza Aslan says about halfway through your film, he says, it's the white part. And when he said that, I was like, I mean, I literally like, oh, let me write that down. That was like, it was a moment because up to that point, you had really only talked about it as Christian nationalism. Right. You didn't actually say white Christian nationalism, but then he said it's the white part that we need to keep our eyes on. And so can you break down, like, what did he mean by that? And what is the ultimate vision that this movement is working toward?
Well, you cannot overstate the role of race, the position of race in this movement. And, you know, I myself am kind of, in my own language, I frequently speak about Christian nationalism without using what I view as more the complete term, which would be white Christian nationalism, which I think is a more accurate term. And the really, really, the because this is not a phenomenon in the Black church. Let's just be very clear about that.
Yeah.
It's not going on. Well,
wait, let me just say, actually, I met a Black white Christian nationalist not too long ago, earlier this year, actually. And I think that you will find it in Black churches that in some, very few, but still some Black churches that came out of white evangelical denominations, right? Mm-hmm. So, and usually not just evangelical, usually it's Pentecostal, some version of Pentecostal. So keep going.
Yeah, no, that's a fair insight. I mean, look, you'll find exceptions to every rule, of course. Right. You know, when we're speaking about a broad social phenomenon, I don't think the numbers are there to show, but I have no doubt. I mean, there of course are people of every different race, ethnicity, persuasion involved in this movement. But I think that's an interesting point about about the roots of certain congregations.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. I know that I asked you a question, but I think this is worth digging into just a little bit. That, and I think that you're actually pretty clear in this in the film that it's not actually about white people. Mm. It's about the power of whiteness, right? Like it's about the desire for whiteness to be seen as supreme. And anybody can embody or hold that value. So the person doesn't have to be Black or white or Latino. They can be Black, white, Latino, or purple and hold that value. So I think that's probably true. Yeah.
True. And I mean, there's, you know, now I'm kind of trying to remember the exact way we characterize it in the film. We certainly have a wonderful, wonderful interview with Dr. Jamar Tisby.
Yeah.
Very excellent on this topic. Mm-hmm. I mean, the desire to, again, to go down this channel for a second, down this road for mm-hmm. a second, is that the whole culture acquiesced to the norm of whiteness. That's as a way of putting it, right? That's mm-hmm. the cultural thing of like who we believe we are as Americans. And you know, I think I think that the United States has a terrific history for all the ways that we've fallen short of living up to our ideal of equal justice under the law and land of opportunity and all that. Really, religious liberty, we have done well. That really, we stand out around the globe for having mm-hmm. done that really well. And the reason we've done it well is because the founders recognized because we were founded by a lot of different religious traditions. There wasn't a central religious tradition. And so the only way there was going to be peace and human flourishing in the United States was if we could find a way to allow people the freedom to believe what they want. And so when we say Americans really believe in freedom, yes, of course, we believe in freedom from tyranny, from a monarch across the sea. But really, every bit as important to that, or maybe very next to that, is that we believe in religious freedom, that everybody mm-hmm. should be allowed to practice whatever faith they want, in whatever way they want. And that means that the government needs to stay out of it. And the government, the laws of the land, are just the thing, are the things that are that we agree on by democratic process and that mm-hmm. don't infringe on people's rights to believe mm-hmm. what they want to believe.
So now you talked about the 2016 GOP convention as Donald Trump's ordination.
Yeah.
I just thought that was, wow. I mean, I had not heard it put in those terms before. Can you kind of unpack that for us?
Yeah, I can, but let me make sure I go back to, because we went down.
Oh, yes.
the thing that you mentioned, an arresting thing from early in the film, I wanted to amplify, which is when Phil Vischer says that for this community of white Christian nationalist belief is that the United States plays a special role in God's story that only the United States can play. And that if democracy gets in the way of that, then democracy has to go.
Right.
I want to just amplify that because that really is the record scratch moment. Mm-hmm. If you can, because I think you can see how that makes sense to this ideology. Mm-hmm. Which is if the United States is as a country plays itself a messianic role in world history, mm-hmm. then It needs to be saved to, as a Christian, as a specially Christian nation. So if you are of that belief, you can justify all kinds of anti-democratic means to make sure that the United States stays a Christian nation for God, right? And then you have to look at the tradition of people justifying actions as God's will. And I have to say, I think the tradition, not tradition is the wrong word, the history shows that the things that are justified as doing God's will tend to be the most vile actions of all, because they aren't justified by other means. You can't win the argument by persuasion, so you say that this is beyond discussion because
Wow.
it's from a deity, and that has empowered people to proceed with slavery, segregation, Nazism, and other horrors.
Yeah, wow. We're going to get back to that Nazism thing in our next segment for sure. That, okay, I will wait to kind of uncover that because we don't have that much time in this segment, but I want to ask you, given what you just said, you know, you talk about Donald Trump's ordination at the 2016 GOP convention, and it's not just, right, it's not just his winning the nomination, it's his ordination, because those who came around him had that theocratic worldview. They were thinking of this as, and they were thinking of America as the divine manifest destiny. And Donald Trump is going to be the one who saves America. And then later you talk about, or you have people who talk about Trump as Cyrus. So can you unpack those two things?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is, this is, I think, just as the, as leadership in a lot of American evangelicalism started to coalesce around Donald Trump, they viewed him as God's choice in the election. And it's a very strange choice because of all the ways in which Donald Trump eschews Christian virtues. But they found a biblical narrative to justify it, which is, you know, a biblical story of King Cyrus, is the king of Persia, is a non-believer, is the use of a non-believer to achieve the ends of a believer. And so they viewed Trump through this lens as a very a flawed vessel that was going to help them to enact God's will.
Walking Freedom Road from coast to coast and around the globe, this is the Freedom Road Podcast. Well, Dan, thank you so much again for opening up your own story, and also for sharing your vision through this, or really not your vision, what you've learned through your through this incredible work. I want to ask you, and you can also say no, and you know we won't include it, but I want to ask you kind of a more controversial question. But it just, I could not, after watching your film, I could not escape the parallels that are coming up for us right now in our American news cycles, and less actually in our news cycles and more in our social media. So you highlight the theological foundations that were offered for the Holocaust, right? Provided by Gerard Kittle. And I never knew that before. I actually never knew who the one major theologian was who had established that. So I really learned something there, and it was quite profound. But to learn that religion itself became the justification for overturning the German democracy. And you guys talk about it. You say, like, religion can be and is becoming the justification for overturning, and it's religion as in the religion of whiteness, right? The justification for overturning democracy here. And you didn't mention Israel. I don't remember you mentioning it at all, but right now, and of course I imagine it's because all of this happened pretty late in your production process, but right now I'm finding myself, you know, resonating a lot with this Christian nationalism thing, with what I see in hard Zionism that I find, you know, in Israel. So I'm just wondering, do you have any thoughts about that since, you know, God and Country has come out and you're watching the same kind of thing happen in Israel? Or do you see it that way?
Well, that's so. First of all, there's no discussion of Israel in the film. The film's
Right.
finished long before the most recent conflict, and that is a really complicated and controversial area. You know, analogy to make. I think what I will say is this: I think that religious nationalism is on the rise all over the world. It's not just an American phenomenon. And it's problematic all over the world, wherever it happens, because all countries are ultimately pluralistic. They have to they have to make it so that minority beliefs, minority faiths, or people who are unfaithful are also fairly represented. And you can't do that when you have two classes of people. So the analogy to Israel is that despite it being sort of known as a Jewish state in law, Israel is a secular state for exactly this reason. And it does allow for people, you know, Muslim and other faiths, Christians and all that, to have equal treatment under the law. But just like Christian nationalism is on the rise here, a Jewish nationalism is on the rise in Israel and is making similar problems there as well. Because and that's a particular and unique problem for the Jewish state, because it is known as the Jewish state. It was established in many ways to be a Jewish state, but again, also to be a modern democracy. And so I think that, yeah, very much the same kind of right wing and authoritarian impulses are driving Israeli politics, Israeli domestic politics right now. And that's very much influencing the way they're handling the conflict right now in Gaza.
So what did you learn about the role of Christian media, you know, the radio, television, and film in the promotion and proliferation of white Christian nationalism throughout the nation and then also the globe?
Well, it's enormous. It's bigger than people, you know. It's largely invisible to mainstream culture.
Yeah.
And so they can't imagine actually how giant it is and how influential it is. But the thing that should be said is, like, as big as the kind of mainstream secular media world is very it's got a lot of different factions in it, right? It's diverse. It has lots of different voices, and people go and they find what they need, and there's all different aspects of it. Christian media is as monolithic as secular media is diverse. And that's really why it's actually disproportionately powerful, way more powerful than any particular niche in secular media, because there is a tremendous coordination and similarity to the messages that are being delivered across all aspects of Christian media. It's not all one thing, but it is largely homogenous messaging, certainly when it comes to the political sphere.
So one of the things that actually really struck me was that, you know, you actually named some of the stations, like K-Love, right, which is one of the two humongous, like, Christian radio groups that has, like, groups of stations in it. And I mean, I know people who have radio programs on K-Love. I know the people who are behind K-Love. And, like, these are the kinds of, it's so huge because it's seen as innocuous. And yet you named it as one of the media vehicles for white Christian nationalism. So, I mean, I'm wondering, have you gotten any pushback from that? Because these are TBN, another one, right? Like, where is it? CBN, not TBN, CBN, Christian Broadcast Network. I mean, these are things that, like, grandmom watches at night. You know what I mean? Like, so how?
Well, it's important to say, and we do say in the film, that not all of the content is political.
Right.
And in fact, probably most is not political.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you know, anybody who's watching their show on whatever it is, music or cooking or house renovations or whatever, like these are all, they just, you know, these are media groups and they put out a lot of content. But the question is, when it's political, what is it? And when it's political, there's not much diversity about what is out there. And so that creates this kind of closed system where people feel like, the only reasonable way to express your political belief as a Christian is according to this list of political deliverables.
Wow. And let me just say, that was literally for me, that was one of the most insightful pieces that were spoken in the course of the whole film, even though the film was chock full of it, of wisdom. So when did you learn about the funding streams? That was another piece that I felt like was amazing, the way that you uncovered the ways that this movement is funded and also how huge the funding streams are.
You know, there's great experts in the film who taught, you know, I mean, their books and then their interviews, they taught me a tremendous amount about it. There's been a lot of great research on it. The truth is that it's, you know, it's an incredibly well-organized and well-funded political movement. And you have to ask yourself whenever you're into, you know, well-funded and well-organized political movements about who are they designed to benefit?
That's
And
good.
that's really the question. And I think when you look at these at the agendas of these groups, it's really hard to see what people are benefiting. Now, there it is ideological. It's not just it's not simply business interests, although there's a fair amount of business interests. The film doesn't get into it that much, but yes, there's a lot of fossil fuel industry money in it. There's a lot of defense contracting money in it, but there's a lot of just ideological money in it, which is, you know, people who are looking to put their idea of Christianity enshrined in law.
Wow. So, what can we do about this? I mean, you ask us to imagine, at one point, one of your participants asked us to imagine the US as a fascist state. You know, is that what we're moving toward with this white Christian nationalist movement? And especially, see, here's the thing is that I think, and you actually do a great job of outlining this in the film, and I want to make sure people understand this as and go out and watch the film, which will become available in theaters. I think it's February 16th. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. So make sure you go see it. But that when we look at this movement, which we have imagined to be this side movement that's kind of like fringe, it's actually made its way into the halls of Congress. Right now, our Speaker of the House is a white Christian nationalist. Speaker of the House, that's the third most powerful person in the United States of America. We have Christian nationalists, white Christian nationalists, who are members of the Supreme Court right now. So I guess my question is, how far are we from this fascist state, and what exactly is at stake?
Well, it's everything is at stake. American democracy is at stake. And I don't, and just so people don't think I'm being, you know, it's not like American democracy is going to fall, you know, in the next two election cycle or two election cycles. But degradations in the effectiveness of it as a, of the United States government as a democracy that is actually responsive to the will of the people is already on decline pretty severely. And with not anti-democratic means used to insert more anti-democratic measures, you can see that accelerating and accelerating rather quickly in just a matter of years. I mean, the Weimar Republic, famously one of the, you know, height of culture, of European culture, and was enlightened, they nobody could imagine how quickly the Weimar Republic fell to electing Adolf Hitler as chancellor, and then his ability to disband democratic processes once he's in power. So I think all that stuff is very real, and you kind of have to shade out what that might look like, or people think that you're being hyperbolic. But you actually touched on something I think is really important, which is that a lot of people, you know, the film does make a point that one of the principal ways that these Christian nationalist movements survive is by fear mongering, is that fear is a very, very persuasive fundraising tool, and it's a good organizing tool. And people will certainly raise the question of, is the film actually doing the same? Is it fear-mongering in its own way, heightening the stakes, amplifying it, making them untrue in order to advance its own political agenda, its own rhetorical points, et cetera? Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, people can ask that question. They should. They should look at the film and they should decide if they think that's the case. What I would just throw out there when you know, if you're asking how severe this is and whether this is fear-mongering or whatever, is to say that we did have a violent insurrection of the United States Capitol the last election. We really did have a Christian nationalist uprising. Not everyone at January 6th was a Christian nationalist, but as it says in the film, and the case is made that Christian nationalism provides the permission structure. We've talked about that already in this context. So, and like you said, despite that, just a few months ago, Mike Johnson was elected Speaker of the House. We now have somebody who explicitly says that his goal in office is to write biblical values, right, but biblical virtues into law. Now, again, there's a spectrum there. If you're just taking the values, you're allowed to do that if you can find popular support. But there's no question that he is fully aligned with the agenda of white Christian nationalists. And like you said, he's third in line to the presidency, and was elected by other representatives who are of like mind. So I think there's a tremendous reason to be very concerned if you're an American who wants to see pluralistic democracy thrive in the United States.
What can we do about it?
Well, that's the toughest question of all. You can go out and see the film.
That is actually, I have to say, that's important because we have to understand it. So we can understand it. We can try to understand it.
It is. It's important to understand. And I have to say, you know, a couple quick thoughts on that. For one, on one level, some people watch the film and say, well, there's nothing, you know, nothing new here. I knew this stuff. And that is true. This has been a movement that's been growing for quite some time. But you put it together in a way, the effort was to put it together in a way that takes the audience on an emotional journey that hopefully gives a little more depth and meaning to all these facts that we knew about the existence of this movement and puts it in a little bit better context. So I think the film will do that. The film also is a great conversation starter. The film is really valuable, I think, for people who are maybe beginning to, they're wondering what's happening with their aunt or uncle who seems like they're a little off. Maybe they're not really voting consistent with their values so much. Their congregation maybe seems like it's moved a few degrees. And it's a really valuable tool. Like, I know that if I were sitting across a table from somebody who is sliding into this white Christian nationalist ideology, I would have a very hard time to, you know, engage them and sort of take it apart piece by piece. But the film did that. That's what we were trying to do, is give a framework and a baseline understanding where people can think about these issues and come to their own conclusions and not hear from me, but hear from the very best voices in the world, both on American democracy and on Christianity itself.
The conversations leaders have on the road to justice. This is the Freedom Road Podcast. Thank you for joining us today. The Freedom Road Podcast is recorded in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and wherever our guests lay their head that night. This episode was engineered and produced by Corey Nathan of Scan Media, and Freedom Road Podcast is executive produced by Freedom Road LLC. We consult, coach, train, and design experiences that bring common understanding, common commitment, and lead to common action. You can find out more about our work at our website, freedomroad.us, and say in the know by signing up for our updates on Substack. So we promise we will not flood your inbox. So a special treat for those who are paid Substack subscribers and Patreon patrons, we are going to have a special backstage conversation with Dan over those on those channels. And so join the conversation on Freedom Road.